Cincinnati is seeing an uptick in crime this summer. The Cincinnati Police Department reported 13 homicides during the first 28 days of June this year, compared to 5 homicides during that same time last year. And property crimes are increasing, too. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about this surge in crime and what the city leaders are doing about it is Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Purval. Thanks for being here, Mayor.
Thanks so much. It's nice to be in the new studio.
Yeah. It's very, very nice, very fancy. So, Mayor, we talked with the police chief before the start of the summer months. At that point, she told us crime was trending in the right direction. What happened?
Yeah, you know, it's incredibly frustrating, let me say, to see the extraordinary work that CPD, the administration, the communities have done over the past 3 years to see significant decreases in crime up until this month. All of our numbers were trending in the right direction, particularly compared to when we took office in January of 2022. And then this past month, I mean, even when we did our pre-summer press conference around crime, because crime always increases tragically during the summer, even at that point, we were looking really, really strong. But this past month has been a real challenge. And the causes of it, you know, are manifold. Obviously, the long-term causes of violence are poverty, without question. But you've got some challenges that are contributing to that. Number one, the really, in some instances, crazy gun laws that we have here in the state of Ohio contribute to it. The accessibility of guns, particularly amongst our children, is contributing to it. Social media, we know, is contributing to the violence. And then finally, and this is more anecdotal. There's less data to back this up, so I hesitate to bring it up. But there does seem to be a sense that people are on edge, given what's happening around the world and in the country, and that is manifesting through violence. And so the challenge is significant. You know, we take very seriously public safety in our community. It's 80% of our operating budget goes to public safety. So much of our time and kind of mental bandwidth is focused on public safety, particularly during the summer months. And I'm so grateful to Chief Thiege for making these significant CPD changes in the short term in order to address it, including this roving task force, the increased use of drones, and of course the lateral class, which will bring 50 additional police officers to our city that have training and experience. So we are up for the task. We have a strong plan in place to mitigate the violence, but it is frustrating. You know, it's completely unacceptable. Enough is enough from the city's perspective, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we get this under control.
And I do want to talk in a little bit more detail about some of those solutions, but I want to get a little bit more to the numbers. Our colleague Becca Costello, WVXU's local government reporter, got the latest data from the police department. I talked about homicides, but violent crime overall is up 11% across the city for those first 28 days of June compared to that same time last year. There were increases in homicides, as I said, robberies, aggravated assaults. You talked about some of the factors that feed into that. I want to touch a little bit on this fatal stabbing of Patrick Herringer in Over the Rhine. The man who's accused in that crime had violated his parole. What can you tell us about the system changes that are happening or have happened as a result of that case?
Yeah, first and foremost, what an awful tragedy. Just a nightmare situation that Sarah and her family are living through. And of course, our thoughts and prayers are with her and her family as they try to recover from this awful tragedy. It is inexcusable that someone who is part of the state parole program would be able to cut off their anklet, their monitor device, be completely on their own, and then commit this vicious and unspeakable crime. I have said from the beginning that when public safety crises or when a tragedy happens in Cincinnati, it's not the responsibility of the governor or the state legislature, it's on me. And so, you know, I take full responsibility for all of the public safety tragedies that happen in our community. And it's important that we focus on fixing it and making sure that it doesn't happen again. the facts of this specific instance. So let me at the front say, I'm not interested in blaming the state or the state parole board. I'm interested in fixing it. And the facts of the matter are that this person cut off their ankle monitor. The city was not informed that he had cut off his ankle monitor, and so we were not looking for him, and he committed this heinous crime. We have to make sure that we reform the system so that local municipalities are informed, and more than that, have the resources to devote the manpower necessary to going after these folks and getting them back to being monitored and holding them accountable. We have worked, the chief, Thigi, has worked with State Legislature Cindy Abrams, who herself was a CPD officer. She understands this issue and is excited to help. The governor's office has offered to be supportive as well. And so now that the budget is passed from the state legislature, we expect the House or the Senate to take this issue up immediately. I'm optimistic that this can be a bipartisan effort to fix a system that needs fixed so that we can prevent this tragedy from ever happening again.
Do I understand, and I might be remembering this incorrectly, I thought that state officials said that they put information about this man who cut off his ankle monitor into a database, and that was kind of their way of informing the city, but now they're starting to inform more directly. Do you think it was a problem that the system just wasn't clear enough?
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of getting into this issue is the frustration of not necessarily getting very clear, transparent answers from the people who have the information. And so what is frustrating about this is the facts seem to change about who's reporting to whom and who's responsible for what. And all of that confusion, all of that swirl is an indication that something is broken and needs to be fixed. So I can't speak for the parole board or what processes they took in order to inform. All I can tell you is that we were not informed, and we need to be informed so we know, you know, who's on the loose in our community. I do know that the parole board is now directly informing some municipalities, but again, this ad hoc fix I think is helpful in the short term, but we need a systems change to make it very clear to everybody whose responsibility is it to be informed when these things happen, and whose responsibility is it to go after these folks and get them back under monitored control. And I'm not sure that anyone right now has those answers, which is why I've been pushing so hard to fix it.
We're talking with Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Pureval about an increase in crime in the city and what city officials and police are doing to address it. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Mayor, property crimes are also higher than they were this time last year. There have been significant increases in burglaries, thefts from autos. You talked about some of these root causes, poverty and that sort of thing. But the chief has said a lot of these thefts from autos are people breaking into cars to try to find guns, to steal guns. So talk a little bit about that and what we can do to prevent those kinds of thefts from our cars.
Well, number one, leave your guns at home. I can't say enough or more stridently or clearly, if you own a gun, do not leave it in your car, period. If you're going to the bars or you're going to a Bengals or Reds game where you're not allowed to have a gun, please do not leave it in your car. The reason we're seeing an increase in car break-ins is because of the fact that these criminals are breaking into cars, finding guns, and it's been so successful for them. You know, this story kind of goes back a few years now to the, I don't know if you recall this or your listeners do, but Kia and Hyundai had a significant problem with a weakness in their security where kids, partly through the kind of spreading of the information on TikTok and other social media platforms, kids were targeting Kias and Hyundais to break in and to steal them or to steal items from them. It seems as though that showed criminals that a lot of people have guns in their cars. And so it became an opportunity to get more illegal guns for whatever illegal pursuit they were going to carry out. And so what you have now, the hangover from that Kia and Hyundai challenge from a few years ago, is now all cars are being targeted. And it's important to know that by and large, they're not necessarily stealing the car, although that's happening as well. they are breaking into a car, particularly if it's unlocked, looking around for a gun. If there's no gun, they're moving on until they find a gun. If enough cars are locked, that's when they'll start breaking into it. But even in the cars that they break into or break glass, they're not necessarily stealing anything from it. You know, back in the day, they'd steal the CD deck or, you know, if there's any cash or valuables. They're only looking for guns. And it's been so successful that they're just going to keep doing it. Now, we've taken, you know, significant proactive changes. Number one, CDRT and SWAT, our most highly trained officers, are in our downtown hotspot areas every single weekend throughout the year. On top of that, we have this roving task force that is going to be focused on the hotspot property crimes, like breaking and enterings, where they're happening, particularly in unattended garages. The chief is going to start providing, for lack of a better term, grades on the various locations that you can park downtown to give you a sense of whether this garage or parking lot has security, whether they're taking proactive steps to keep your valuables safe, whether they have cameras, whether they have a parking attendant so that the community has more information about where they're parking. But the biggest thing that the community can do is please leave your guns at home. And it's not just important for breaking and entering. Obviously, there's a pipeline of crime, right? So the guns get stolen from the car, and then those guns are being used for violent crime. So even these property crimes, which some people may think are less important, we believe are critically important because it's part of the pipeline of the supply for illegal guns in our community. You know, and it's not just important to leave your guns at home. Wherever your gun is, it should be properly stored. We have seen time and time again children getting access to their parents' firearms and a tragedy taking place. And these are not teenagers. These are like, you know, 7 or 5-year-olds. Unfortunately, we had a significant tragedy in Madisonville just a couple of years ago with this exact same fact pattern. So if you own a gun, please be a responsible gun owner and safely store your gun, and please do not bring it in your car.
We have some callers on the line. Please hold on because we need to take a short break. And later in the program, sometimes a school nurse may be a child's only access to medical care, but are there enough to go around? This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Purval. We're talking about the increase in crime in the city and what city leaders and the police are doing about it. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. We do have some callers on the line. First, let's go to Tom. Hi, Tom. Thanks for listening. What's your question?
Yeah, two questions. Can there be a lower level of officers for things like traffic control? Somebody thought there was, and they found out. I think it is just regular full-fledged police that do both duties. So a lower level of officer for traffic control, and can red light cameras be instituted to help free up some officers there, too? Those are my questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. Mayor, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. And I hate to speak so frankly, but just getting to the core of it, we need traffic enforcement in addition to making sure that we are mitigating gun violence. What we have seen, particularly early on before we took some significant actions, like the very annoying speed humps throughout the city, what we have found is that we have more and more reckless drivers that are putting pedestrians and others at risk. We've had several tragedies over the past 3 years that we are working very hard to fix, particularly in our school zones. You know, red light cameras is something that I support, but it would require a charter change at the city level because right now our constitution makes it very difficult for us to deploy that. There are also some state level kind of obstacles. For every dollar that a red light camera generates in revenue through tickets, that is taken out of our local government fund at the state level. So there's a big disincentive to providing red light cameras. I still support it, but it would take some significant changes at both the state and local level to make it as effective as possible. It's also important to know that this roving task force of about 30 additional officers in our hotspot areas aren't taking away from regular patrols or from when you call 911 or when we're enforcing traffic conditions. So it's only a value add.
Okay. We also have Annity on the line. Hi, Annity. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi, Yeah. The crime in Cincinnati, especially down around OTR, is something that's always been like really important to me as a longtime resident of the city. And truly, honestly, I think one of the biggest things that could be helpful is the comeback of like community centers, something that's, you know, low cost for low income people and something that is a safe place for kids and teenagers to go, because the rise in crime among kids and teenagers has been outrageous lately. And truly, they're just bored and they have nowhere to go and nothing to do. There are a lot of free activities available, but they're typically only something that lasts a day and they're usually volunteer based. So I really think that instead of more high end restaurants or super expensive apartments downtown, we should really, really put an emphasis on a community center and a more community driven place for these kids to go.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there, Anity, just so the mayor can respond. Thanks so much.
I love that idea. In fact, that's what we're doing. We just broke ground on a several hundred million dollar rec center in North OTR near Findlay Market called the Findlay Rec Center. That is specifically to address that concern from the caller. I would push back on the idea that there's nothing for them to do. We have Rec at Night, which occurs for teenagers at our rec centers late at night. That last year was awarded a state award for from crime mitigation. You have to remember, last year we saw a 35% decrease in shootings amongst our teens, and part of that success was kind of programming at night, like Rec at Night. We've opened up all of our pools. Every single city pool is open this summer, which is I think only the second time that that has happened. Last year was the first time since the pandemic. We spent so much money on youth employment, on making sure that there are activities for kids to do in the evenings and on the weekends. And so, you know, it's frankly, I'm a parent. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And if the city knows, if I know where your kids are more than you do, that is a significant problem. And so there's it's hard for me to take the excuse that there's nothing for these kids to do. There are so many things for the kids to do, so many things that the city funds for them to do. But I do think we need more parental engagement to hold our kids accountable, to parent our kids, because right now, you know, this past weekend, we had several hundred unattended teens just unfortunately running through the city, and that is completely unacceptable.
Thank you, Anity. We really appreciate that.
Oh, and then I would also add, we just cut the ribbon on a new Boys and Girls Club in Roll Hill earlier this year or late last year. So we are building rec centers and community centers in specifically areas where there are crime, because we agree that that is part of the strategy to mitigate it.
Okay. Thank you, Anity. We appreciate that. We also have Joy on the line. Hi, Joy. What's your question?
Yes, I am still here. Quick question for you. I just want to know, because I've heard this twice now in two different news reports, that the reason it's being claimed that the reason kids are breaking into cars is to find guns. I just want to know what sort of research or how you come to that conclusion, especially in light of recent events where, you know, kids were tragic events where a gun was involved with a kid and an allegedly stolen car that was being repossessed. How did you come to that data? What made you think that they were stealing guns as opposed to, or looking for guns and stealing cars, as opposed to some very mischievous activities of getting a car for a joyride?
Thank you, Joy.
Because by and large, they're not stealing the car. They're breaking in, looking around for a gun, not finding a gun, and moving on to the next car. If they were just stealing the car for a joyride and you know, just having a good time, then that would be what they were doing. And unfortunately, that's not the case.
It might be the case in some instances, I would guess.
Sure, some instances, but by and large, that's not what's happening. By and large, if a car is stolen, it's stolen for specifically a criminal pursuit. But for the most part, the cars are being broken in, and the time spent on each car is very, very limited. We see that in not just the data, we also see it in the video evidence that we have, and we see it in our post interviews with the suspects when we arrest them. So this is not an opinion, this is what is happening. And so to help us, if you could please both lock your car and also do not leave guns in your cars, that would be very helpful. If they keep finding guns in cars downtown, then they'll continue to break into cars.
Thank you, Joy. We appreciate that call. We also have Sue Ellen on the line. Hi, Sue Ellen.
Hi. I live in East Price Hill and drive in the nearby neighborhoods around me. In the last couple of weeks, I have noticed one or more patrol cars out and about every time I drive anywhere. This is a great increase in just the recent couple of weeks. I'm wondering if the mayor is aware of any specifics around that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the specifics are what we've been talking about this entire segment. So, you know, an increase in visibility, an increase in patrols, increase in use of drones. You know, hopefully, I appreciate the caller letting us know that she sees it. Hopefully, more of the city sees it as well. You know, but I will just a word of caution. There is police visibility is an important aspect of this. Absolutely. But it is not a panacea. It is not going to alone fix it. And you just have to look at, you know, when we have violence at the banks, there is a SWAT tank, basically, with so many SWAT members right there. And that doesn't prevent shootings. When you see what happened on Main Street a few summers ago with the mass shooting, there was a police officer standing 20 feet away from where that shooting happened. And so we take very seriously the visibility of our police officers. We do believe that it helps not just with prevention, but also with deterrence. But it alone cannot be the only strategy, and it's certainly not the only strategy that we're deploying.
Yeah. Thank you, Sue Ellen. We appreciate that call. We also got an email from Steve in Oakley. He writes, a particular hotspot for violence and crime in OTR seems to be a large gas station and convenience store located and in intersection of main streets. Can this establishment be closed as a nuisance establishment, or a bar that sells spirit, like a bar that sells spirits can be?
Yeah. Yes. The answer is yes. You know, I know exactly what Steve is talking about. That is an area in North OTR, really on the kind of border of South OTR and North OTR, that has been a critical spot for several years. All options are on the table as it relates to either shutting it down or redeveloping it into a different site. Gas stations are hard for redevelopment purposes because they require so many brownfield remediation dollars. But that certainly isn't stopping us from being as creative as possible. And again, public safety devotes so much of our resources towards it. And economic development is a critical tool in addressing and mitigating violence. And so we're definitely interested in flexing that muscle if necessary.
You mentioned before, I think what you said was, if the city knows more about where your kids are than the parents do, that's a problem. Does the city have a legal mechanism for holding parents accountable if there are teens or young people who are out there getting in trouble time and time again?
We're looking at that with our solicitor's office right now. Look, there's pros and cons to it. I'm at a point now with how many unattended teens there are, particularly on weekend nights, where something has to change. It is out of control. And I think holding parents accountable has to be part of that conversation, particularly for kids who have already been in trouble before. The parents should be on notice that they need to have a little bit more engagement and better understand where they are at night. I don't know what that looks like at this moment. I will say that part of my concern in going down this path is not making a bad situation worse. You know, I don't inherently believe that some people don't care about their kids. I refuse to believe that. I'm sure there are significant challenges that family is experiencing that makes it difficult to be more involved in their kids' lives. But we do so much to support vulnerable families that there does have to be some accountability at some point, and we're exploring that.
Is there any call to prosecute these young people differently?
You know, that's a question for the prosecutor, I would say. I do think there is growing frustration within our police department about, you know, doing all the work to hold a teen accountable. And then for whatever reason, in the justice system, the kind of consequence of their actions isn't necessarily congruent. In a lot of people's perspective, I have been working with our solicitor's office to take a look at any, you know, cases or determinations that are questionable or people have a concern about, and really getting to the facts of what happened. It's not always just on the judges, right? The judges can only decide on the facts that are presented to them and the information that's presented to them. And oftentimes, particularly when you're dealing with bond, these hearings are a matter of minutes, if not seconds. And so it can be difficult, just given how many cases there are, to paint a full picture from the prosecutor's perspective. And so, you know, whether that means having a CPD officer in these hearings to more effectively flesh out all the details and all the evidence that we have on the alleged perpetrators, that might be an option. But we are looking at ways to strengthen the communication between CPD, the prosecutor's office, and then ultimately what gets presented to the judge, because I think there is an area of improvement there.
I want to ask you kind of a big picture question, and I'll urge our listeners to go to our website, WVXU.org, to look at Becca Costello's reporting on the specifics that we've talked about with the drones, with the task force. But from a big picture perspective, you know, I see criticism from Republicans that crime is spiking in cities controlled by Democrats, and they say this is happening all over the country. I wonder how you respond to that.
I think it's stupid. You know, I mean, irrespective of your political ideology, we all want safety. I think it's easy to blame partisan politics when things are challenging. But you know, there is no. It's not as if I'm deploying strategies consistent with a partisan ideology. What I love about being mayor is that, you know, whether it's a Republican or Democratic idea, the most important thing from my perspective is, does it work? Is it effective? And you know, particularly with public safety, politics goes out the window. What is most important to me is that people can live and thrive in a city where they are safe, but also importantly, where they feel safe. You know, and when extremes take over the conversation, whether the extreme of defund the police, which is also idiotic, or the extreme of just, you know, arresting our way out of any problem, those are, you know, those kind of partisan ideologue ways of approaching crime are just ineffective and oftentimes makes it worse. But from a messaging perspective, it's a lot easier to just say, hey, there's crime, let's just arrest everybody. Or it's a lot easier to say, hey, there's a problem, or there was a critical incident, and so let's just get rid of all police. Governing is much harder than political slogans. And as mayor, it's my job to make sure that all stakeholders are engaged, that the community is engaged, and that we're pursuing strategies that actually make people safer, not that make people better because they got to get something off their chest and scream into the void.
Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Pureval. Thank you so much for your time today, Mayor.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Up next, we'll discuss whether local students are getting the access they need to school nurses. This is Cincinnati Edition.